Welcome to Great Minds, a very special Climatech edition here. And our guest today is really the one person who, without this, would not be happening. We are very excited about what's going to take place in Boston next week, June 3rd to 5, the inaugural edition of Climatech. And the most important person in the whole equation, Yvonne, really here has been you right from the beginning. And with us is the Secretary of Economic Development for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, Yvonne Howe. Yvonne and her undersecretary, Ashley Stolba, have been stalwarts in support. I have a great vision, which we're going to talk about. And I'm thrilled to get a chance to talk to you today as we are just a couple days away from Climatech.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Matt, for having me. Thank you so much for all your partnership and collaboration and leadership on this. It's nice of you to say all those things, but honestly, this has really been spearheaded and led by our governor and our ecosystem. And I feel really lucky to be in this state and to be part of this awesome team, Massachusetts. So we're really looking forward to the event.
Terrific. And we're going to cover a lot of Massachusetts ground here. And I think we'll mostly break from format here because I think I really do want to talk a lot about what's happening in Massachusetts around that intersection of the climate crisis and technology and talk about the governor's leadership. But let's just do a little bit of digging, looking backwards. You started relatively early on, great academic background, and also worked for some great companies who are really known for building terrific foundations. One of them was McKinsey. So I'd love to go back to the early 90s and talk about that experience. I think you were there for a pretty good run, and talk about how that really helped build that Yvonne Howe Foundation.
Haha. Well, yeah, this is going way back in history now, so I'm so old. But yes, if you go way back, I'm a child of immigrants, and I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I just knew that I wanted to make the most of this American dream. And so I actually started out college pre-med and then realized I didn't love medicine. Then I thought I was going to be an academic, went to grad school, and then I realized academia was pretty lonely. And so then I started out my career at McKinsey just to try out business. What I realized about McKinsey is that it was an awesome way for me to apply the economics that I loved. So the analytics, the quantitative aspects, the modeling, but actually do it in a team environment. And I'm a big team sports person. And also to really make something happen. So to really actually implement those tools and analytics and to drive real change with companies and organizations. So I learned a ton at McKinsey. I was there for 5 years and I'm very grateful for that time and all the training and foundation that I got.
And you must have done something right because you moved from there at a very young age, I'm guessing still in your late 20s, maybe sniffing 30, and end up in a very senior role at another great company, Honeywell.
Yeah, that's funny that you say that, though. So I think I was 27 or 28 when I moved to Honeywell. Nobody at the time that I moved in 2003 would have said Honeywell was a great company. So if you go back in time, when I joined Honeywell, it was during a very dark time for the company, actually. So the company had been announced that it would sell itself to General Electric, a competitor. And so people had assumed that deal was happening. A lot of the talent left Honeywell. And essentially, GE was running the place while waiting for regulatory approval. What ended up happening was that the European Trade Commission decided not to approve the merger, saying that it was not in favor of it because of antitrust reasons. So the deal fell apart at the last minute, and there was really nobody left running Honeywell. So Honeywell, the board there quickly brought in a new CEO, Dave Cote, who had actually been from GE. He came in and he interviewed me about 6 months into his tenure there. And the stock was at an all-time low. It was in the 20s. And the company was kind of in disarray, been rudderless for a good while. When Dave Cote interviewed me, he said, you know, look, you seem smart. You've done a bunch of consulting, but if you join me, we're going to learn how to turn around a company. You're going to learn all the nuts and bolts of manufacturing and operations, global business, technologies, go to market, and we are going to turn this company around. So it was kind of a really unique opportunity, but I think people, when I told them I was joining Honeywell, nobody said, oh, wow, you're joining a really great company. But I joined then, and we did turn the company around. So in the 5 years I was there, I helped with Dave and the team on the overall strategy. We sold a bunch of businesses. We bought a bunch of businesses. We improved our cash flow and all of our metrics tremendously and put in place key processes. And then I went out into one of the divisions and I ended up getting a chance to have my first P&L ownership position. So I ran almost a $2 billion division of Honeywell. When I left after the 5 years, the stock was in the 60s, I think 70 almost. And then since then, they've continued to grow. And the stock is now in the, I think it hit a high of the 200 and somethings. So I should have held on to all of it, but it was really an incredible experience. I learned a ton about how to run and operate a business.
And you also got a global perspective there.
Completely. So one of the things I'm really proud of when I was at Honeywell is that when I went into the division, it was this, the global security business. We were very North American centric with some presence in Europe and almost no presence in China and Asia. If you think about that division, they sell security products into residential and also into commercial buildings, industrial buildings. At the time in 2003, China was the fastest growing economy, really, probably in the world. And there was construction everywhere happening in China. It was just on that kind of curve of development. And we had almost no presence in China. And so one of the things we did was to really build out our strategy and build out our team. We exploded in China with all of the building that was happening. So it was very global in every respect.
What a great, great story. You referred earlier to that notion of being a child of immigrants and an immigrant work ethic. That's something I think that is very real, and we see it across business. In your growing up, were you encouraged in a particular way? Did you work as a kid? I started working when I was 12 years old. Second generation. My grandfather came through Ellis Island, but I grew up in New York, so I can't really call myself an immigrant. But talk about that immigrant work ethic and how that helped shape you.
Yeah, no, I love that. Well, your parents and grandparents would be very proud of you, Matt. So they should be very proud. For me, I grew up with my grandmothers living with us. And so, you know, maybe other kids, when they went to bed, they got like bedtime stories about princesses or unicorns. I went to bed and my grandmothers would tell me stories from their childhood and their growing up. And they, you know, one of my grandmothers had her feet bound when she was very young because that was the era that happened. And so even up until she lived until 97, but even up until her 80s and 90s, when we would go shopping for shoes for her, we would shop in the kids' shoe section or at Stride Ride. She was a size four kids. My other grandmother remembered and would tell me vividly the stories of when she was a school teacher and the day the Japanese came to the school and shot a bunch of the teachers and the kids, and how she was lucky that she escaped. And then she and my grandfather and their kids had to flee on horseback to try to get out of the country and make their way to Taiwan. So I grew up with a tremendous sense of gratitude that we were American and we were born in America in this place. And no matter what I was facing in school or in life, none of it could compare to the choices that my grandmothers or grandfathers had to make. And none of it compared to what my parents had to face because they then their dream growing up in Taiwan, which was then again a very poor country, but growing up in Taiwan, their dream was to study hard and find a way to America to have more opportunity and to give their kids a better life. And so they came to this country on scholarship by themselves with, you know, very little money, very, you know, not much English and, you know, not many contacts. And they made their way here. So I grew up with a tremendous sense of gratitude for what my parents and grandparents had sacrificed to give me this opportunity. And I just knew growing up that my goal was to try to make the most of it and to try to make them proud, but also try to make a difference, take these gifts that I've been given and try to do something positive with it. So that's been the journey I've been on.
That's another great story. All right, we're going to skip over a lot of stuff because I really want to talk about what's happening in Massachusetts now. You've had some great runs at some great companies, Bain Capital, of course, our mutual friend Matt Freeman, who introduced us, and so accomplished various COO roles, CEO roles, CFO roles. But let's talk about something that you just sort of mentioned, which is giving back in public service. And Paul and I, who thanks to you and Ashley, have become great friends and great partners in climate tech, are really struck by the caliber of people in what you call Team Massachusetts. Talk about how Governor Healey's been able to bring so many people together who have really embraced that notion of public service.
We are very, very lucky in our state. So I will just say, first of all, you know, I'm very indebted to Matt Freeman, our dear friend from Bain Capital, and also to you and to Paul. I think you all have exemplified what it means to collaborate and to work together. And especially in a startup environment, it's really hard. You have lots of, you know, ups and downs. The highs are high, the lows are lows. And it's really remarkable to see how you have all worked together so closely. And then in terms of public service, so I have had a very, you know, lucky career in business. Never thought I would be in government. I was at home the week before Christmas and, December 2022, getting ready for the holidays, and my cell phone rang, and it was a number I didn't recognize. I picked it up. It was probably the kid's doctor or school calling or something. And the other line was Maura Healey. And at first, I thought it was maybe a prank call, or maybe it was one of those robodial things asking for money. And then I said, hello, hello. And she said, yeah, this is Maura Healey. I just got elected governor and I'm looking for Yvonne Howe. Is this Yvonne Howe? And I was like, okay, wait, this is probably not a prank call, a robodial. It turns out she was looking to bring someone into her cabinet with business experience. And my name had come up. I had only met her once. I had not been involved in her campaign. And so we ended up meeting for lunch the very next day. And then flash forward a couple weeks, I got this offer and had a short window to decide whether to do it or not. And, per my last comments, I just feel like I've been the beneficiary of so many opportunities. And if this is a chance to give back, especially to the state where we've raised our kids, where we've had great careers, that I should at least try. So I got sworn in January 17th of 2023, and it's been an amazing year and a half almost in this role. I've learned a tremendous amount about state government and about our state. And I've also been really blown away by the caliber of people we have in state government and also just across all of our ecosystem. In state government, the governor is a former basketball player, which is quite remarkable. She's my height, which is short, like 5'4", but she was the captain of the Harvard basketball team and she played professional basketball after graduating. And the lieutenant governor is also a former basketball player. They talk a lot about teamwork and they talk a lot about finding the best people and then working together. And so we have awesome folks in our cabinet and across state government. What's amazing to me is coming from the private sector, not only are the people we have in state government wicked smart and awesome, they work very hard, very long hours, kind of similar hours as Bain Capital or when I was at PillPack. Weekends, early mornings, late nights, they do what it takes. And we don't pay them very much. There's no bonus, there's no equity, there's no IPO coming, there's no fancy perks. So we are really lucky in our state to have just mission-driven, awesome folks here serving. And then across the state in our large companies, our startups, our small companies, our all of our different sectors and our nonprofits, our educational institutions, our hospitals, we just have awesome, amazing, world-class talent, folks who are also just good humans who we may not always agree on everything all the time, but we want to work together and we want to do the right thing and we care about each other and we care about this state. So I am very grateful for our team, Massachusetts. It's really something quite special.
Talk about the problems that we have in attracting people like you into public service today. You're more the exception, I think, than the rule these days. And certainly in my state, in New York, you see the caliber of folks who are, in our city in New York, the deputy mayors in the governor's office here, in Washington. You don't see Yvonne Howes coming into public service as much as we should, I think. What's your take on getting more folks like you who have had success in the business community, who understand how to turn a company around as you did as part of the team at Honeywell? But this seems to be a system-wide challenge to get private sector leaders to step in to government, and not for a 10-year, run, but even a 2-3 year run can have an awfully big impact.
Yeah, I fully agree with you, Matt. And I think in Massachusetts, we are lucky and have done probably better than most places in this regard. If you look at our governors, we've had Republican governors and we've had Democratic governors. And most recently, former Governor Baker was a business person and also had worked in state government. He went back and forth. Former Governor Patrick was also a business person and he's also had worked in government. He went back and forth. We had Governor Romney was also a business person and came into state government. So we have had really a string of governors. And then if you look at the next levels down, some of my predecessors in this role have also gone back and forth between government and business. So we've, I think, done a better job than many places. But I think it is hard because for a couple of reasons. One is that, well, one is the compensation. If you're a successful business person, you're going to make a lot more money staying in the private sector than you are in state government for good reason, because, state government is funded by taxpayer dollars, and I view every single taxpayer dollar as extremely precious. And so we don't want to be paying people like crazy, ridiculous salaries. So you have to find the right kind of person who is not just purely financially motivated. But the other things I think that are hard about it is that this is a very public job. I have worked in public companies. I've worked in startups that have had a lot of media and things, but this job is really quite different than anything in the private sector, and that so much of the job is being out in the public eye. And so, doing events that are recorded, talking to the media, having, all of your emails being available for public record, being in board meetings that have open meeting law, just it's a very publicly facing job. There's a lot of important reasons why that is, and it's a really important part of the job. It's a very big difference in the private sector. In the private sector, you have public events and you maybe speak to the media, but the vast majority of your day, you're internally facing or talking to customers or vendors privately, and you can kind of just focus on things and move ahead. Here, there's just a level of public scrutiny that is very important, again, for democracy to function, but it's a very different thing than being an executive at a company. And so that is a big adjustment for folks, especially for many business executives who just want to be anonymous and kind of do their thing. This is not that. The other thing that's very different is that if you're used to being in the private sector, even in large companies, there's complexities and there's bureaucracy, but it's a pretty straightforward governance process. You have a very clear set of things you're trying to accomplish around increasing shareholder value, which means driving up revenue, driving up profits, increasing market share. It's a clear set of shared metrics. You have a board of directors, you have a CEO, you have a set of executives. It is a much cleaner line of decision making. Like, who owns what? How do you make a decision? And then how do you move on? Again, because of the nature of democracy and because of the much more complex environment of state government, there are many more metrics. Many of the metrics are lagging and harder to quantify. And you want to have checks and balances in democracy. And so decision making is much more complicated. So you have the state legislature, you have all of the other cabinet secretaries, you have the governor's office, the lieutenant governor, you have all of the mayors and town managers of 351 towns and cities, you have companies, you have chambers, you have all of the different kind of stakeholders, you have labor, you have nonprofits. And so it is just a much more complex decision making process, and it takes a lot longer. But I think the thing that I say to people is that we want that. That's how democracy works. And it's a little more painful and it'll takes a little bit longer. And it's probably frustrating in some ways, but hopefully by having so many constituents involved and having so many different voices heard, you come out with a better answer that people feel a lot more ownership of. And that's how democracy works. If we didn't have that, it might be another dictatorship, and we don't want that. And so, and the other thing I say that to business folks is that, things may be simpler and easier in a business, but if you're successful in a business, and we were wildly successful in, for example, at PillPack, we made a huge difference in that business on helping people take medications and stay alive. But at the end of the day, we had a couple hundred thousand patients, customers, and we had, 1,000 or 2,000 employees. You're making a difference in a very small way. Here in state government, in our state, we have 7 million residents and we have a $750 billion GDP. Getting things to happen takes a lot longer. It's a lot harder. But if you can make it happen, you're impacting 7 million people and all these families and all these towns. And you are moving a $750 billion GDP and setting up an economy and a state to be successful, not just this year or this quarter, but really for many years and many generations to come. And so it's harder, but the impact can be tremendous. And I think that's the draw that we need to focus on to get more business folks into these jobs.
Yeah, it's so well said and so inspirational. We've been struck. I've been back and forth now probably, 15 times in the last 6 months. And what you really see is a city and a state that is benefiting from strong leadership. And one of the things that we've observed over the 20-year run of Advertising Week is you get a lot of insight into who's successful and why and who isn't. And, it's been a little odd, like in the same time period as most people have had three or four or five different jobs, I've sort of had the same job for 20 years, had the same email. I never thought I would be that person. And so you have that, vantage point of continuity. And the common trait of the companies that have been successful and have had sustained runs navigating the analog era to the digital era comes down to continuity and strength of the leadership team. And the team that you have up there, led by Governor Healey and Lieutenant Governor Driscoll, and so much talent, Emily Reichert, who we're thrilled will be speaking as well next Tuesday night.
And we should not forget the city of Boston. Mayor Wu, is a tremendous force. I've known her for a long time. She was actually a student at law school where my husband is a professor. So I've known her since she was in her student days. We're so grateful to have such a strong partner in the city. And I always say this, including to the mayor and her team, but our state cannot be successful without Boston being wildly successful. Of course, we can't only have just Boston be successful, but this partnership between our state and the city with the governor and Mayor Wu and our teams is really, really important. And we're so grateful that we get to work together in so many ways, and especially on climate tech. This is a shared vision across our state and the city.
So you took us where we need to go next. Let's talk about the state and the city's position in climate and technology more broadly, and then let's hone in on climate tech.
We got to this focus on climate tech through a process last year. So one of the things I learned when I came into this role, and I'm new to state government, so I've every single day I'm learning a lot still. But when I came in January of 2023, one of the things I realized was that it's a requirement mandated by our state legislature, which I think is very, very wise, actually, that once every 4 years, we are required to do a formal state economic development plan. So that's usually at the start of every new term for a governor. So that was last year. So we took it very seriously. If we had to do it anyways, we said, let's really do it. So we organized 9 regional sessions across the state and invited the public to come and attend. And so we had huge companies, small companies, all kinds of different types of people, nonprofits, schools, anybody was welcome to attend. We had more than 1,300 people show up. We then had a Spanish language session with a bunch of folks who showed up from that community. And then we did 11 sector deep dives on every sector of our economy. So technology and life sciences and small business and agriculture and tourism and healthcare. And then we looked at all the data. And we pulled up from that and created our plan, which we published in December. It's called Team Massachusetts. That's a kind of common theme here because we have the best team when we work together across every part of our state. And it's called Leading Future Generations because we have led in our state for a long time. We led starting 250 years ago when we threw some tea into a harbor and sparked a revolution, which became the country. And we've led ever since. And we've led by innovating and solving big, hard, important, mission-driven problems. And this is not the time to stop. So we want to make sure we continue to lead for future generations. A key part of the plan, which came out of all of this work and this research, was that we already as a state are leading because we are one of the vanguard states in terms of fighting climate change. So we fully acknowledge the issues around climate change, and we have set very ambitious targets for ourselves around emissions and how we regulate. And we are the first state with Governor Healey. I think it's the first thing she did when she came into office. She signed an executive order to create the only and the first climate chief at the state level, so at the cabinet level. So Chief Hoffer is the country's first ever climate chief. And her mandate is to look across the cabinet, across every secretariat, and to work across the state to think about climate as the existential crisis of our time. So we already were leading in that way. And the Mayor Wu in Boston has also had been very ambitious about making sure Boston is a green city. As we did all the research for the economic development plan, we realized not only is there an imperative to fight climate change and to lead that way, which we already were, but there's also an incredible opportunity as we lead in fighting climate change to invent and innovate and develop new technologies to do this. That's going to create all kinds of startups and companies and jobs across the state. So just if you flash back in 2008 under Governor Patrick then, he and his team made a realization that back then that was in the early days of kind of a lot of the big discoveries that were emerging around drug discovery and curing diseases. He and his team realized that they were just on the cusp of that, and that if the state could invest, and really partner closely with the ecosystem, we would not only cure diseases and help people stay healthy, but we could also create a ton of startups and companies and all kinds of jobs. And out of that partnership was born companies like Moderna, with flagship pioneering companies like Vertex. And that was in 2008. You look now where we are today, we have an entire economy of life sciences companies that have driven a ton of growth for the state. And also, by the way, made lots and lots of people's lives better around the world. We have the same opportunity now in climate tech. We are in the early stages of this new industry. We have a lot to do to fight climate change. And in doing so, if the state can partner with all of our ecosystem here, with companies and startups and venture firms and our academia and all of our researchers, we can create a ton of companies that will scale and become big global leaders and all kinds of jobs. And so this focus came out of the plan, and we just filed in March an economic development bill called the Mass Leads Act, which takes the plan, which we're very proud of, but it's just a piece of paper, it's just a strategy. It takes the plan and converts it into a bill, which is the actual dollars and owners and governance and legislation to bring this plan to life. And so it's a $3.5 billion economic development bill, of which $1 billion is allocated to climate tech. And really around how do we spur the innovation and spur the creation of a whole economic sector dedicated to fighting climate change. So that's kind of where this came from. And as it relates to the event, when we were looking at this, we were trying to study what's out there today, who's doing this, who can we learn from? And we realized, again, it's very early in this industry. Many of the gatherings that are happening today are really around very kind of wonky policy, regulatory things. And that's not the main focus of the economic development piece. Many of the gatherings that are happening today are very academic. So it's about sharing research papers, looking at the science. That's really not about the innovation or the business piece of it. And then there are some gatherings that are very advocacy and very kind of, focused on just certain advocate groups. And again, that's not really, filling this void of economic growth. And so what we thought we would do with climate tech is have a gathering of folks who are really interested in the technology, the innovation, the startups, the economic growth development here around this new emerging industry that is being created to help fight climate change. So that's really the goal of this climate tech event next week at Fenway.
Well, a tremendous story. And, it conjures the memory of a dear friend of ours, Paul Polman. Paul, as CEO of Unilever, was really the first to recognize and embrace sustainability as part of Unilever's core business and showed that purpose and profit were not at odds, that in fact they were hand in hand. And what you're doing in Massachusetts, leveraging tremendous strength that you have already, but really packaging it in a very clever way so that the reputation will catch up to what is actually happening on the ground in Massachusetts. And one of the analogies we talked about early on with you and Ashley was, if you go back and you look in the history in Los Angeles and Hollywood, that didn't just become what it is for film and television production. There were specific decisions and people and leaders who made decisions and built that business. And looking at what's happening now in the Commonwealth around that intersection of climate and technology, it's the same thing. And it also, by the way, happens to be the most important global crisis, genuine crisis that we are facing as a people. And to do something that's also pretty good for business along that journey, you're hitting a lot of notes there.
Yeah, and I think one of the things we spend a lot of time thinking about and doing our plan is really what do we bring to the table in our state? What are we good at? What's our competitive differentiation? What are our unique strengths? What are our superpowers in our state? And if you look at who we are as a state, we are, I think, leading in a different way than a lot of other states. We have always led, and we are leading, and we will lead in a unique way by being a innovation-driven, strong economy that is focused on solving really hard, important problems that help make the world a better place. That's what we've always done. We don't work on stuff because it's easy. That's what JFK, the son of Massachusetts, he said it best. We don't go to the moon because it's easy. We do it because it's hard. So we work on things that involve curing disease and taking better care of people and educating people and figuring out, how to defend our country and fighting climate change and saving our planet is right up that same alley. And we do all of this, and we have a strong economy while also being a community that is an awesome place to live, where we celebrate freedoms. We let people love who they want to love. We let people control their bodies. We care about safety. We care about diversity and immigration. We care about science and climate change. And so we are trying to lead by being an innovation-driven, really strong economy and just the best place for people to live their best lives with mountains, with ocean, with amazing culture and restaurants. And by the way, awesome sports teams, go Celtics. And so that is really the vision for Massachusetts. And I think climate tech is an area that plays right up to our strengths and plays on our history, but also really brings us to the future of how we need to lead right now and for the many years to come.
Well, it was so such a joy to get a chance to hear you talk about something with such passion, such conviction, and getting stuff done and results. And you're a north-south mover. It's been a joy to get to work under your leadership, along with Ashley and the team. And you introduced me to someone who's now become a lifelong friend in Paul Scapicchio. And we are just thrilled to have been given the opportunity to help create this platform. And we'll see you next week in Boston.
No, we're so excited. And Ashley and I are going to treat you and Paul to some champagne or something after next week. But I think we're going to learn a lot. We're going to have a lot of energy. And, you know, just like everything else, this is, it's just the beginning. It's not, certainly not the end. This is just the beginning of, you know, not just conversations, but I really hope lots of actions and partnerships and real solutions that will come out of this that will help us make not just our state a better place, but really the country and the world. So we're really excited about next week, and we're looking forward to celebrating and also to doing this work together with you, Matt, and with our whole community and ecosystem.
Right. Well, when we post, it'll actually be this week. We're going to post this on Tuesday. So
I love it.
Wonderful. I'm sure we'll speak before Monday, and we'll see you Monday night, opening night at Fenway Park for Climate Tech. We'll be at MGM and House of Blues, about 60 some odd thought leadership sessions, our accelerator program, just an awful lot will be happening in Boston. As a father of a BU alum, very happy to get a chance to come back there, and love your town, love your state, and can't be more excited.
Thank you so much, Matt. We're so grateful. See you next week.
You got it.
Bye.